You're listening to the Working It Out podcast, part of the Humours of Hit Network. I'm Alex, and I'm here to look into what inspires those we look to for motivation. I want to understand their real relationship with physical activity and the barriers they've had to break through to be happy, but also successful. On today's episode, we have our park CEO, Bourne Barakor, who is also a coach for Tough Mudder and LucasAid. We talk about pushing yourself to the limit, how music is deeply ingrained in everything he does, and the ingredients to a workout banger. This one's a fun one. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the podcast, Bourne Barakor.
Hey! Thank you, man. I'm so gassed to be on here today, actually. I'm so excited. I can't wait.
Cool, thank you. So we open up with a first question, which is about our locker. We've got a Humours of Hit locker. Everyone's allowed to bring one item into the locker. This is a all about our community. You bring one item in and it's about your relationship with physical activity and health. So if you're going to bring one item in and put it into our locker, what would you bring? For an example, we spoke to Lauren last week and she said it was her pair of H&M socks because she competed and in a duathlon when it was meant to be a triathlon, and she didn't have any socks, so she wore H&M ones and she still won. So that was her wow. item. But it could be anything from that to something related to anything in your house or anything. So what one item would you induct into the locker?
How big is this locker? Because I'm thinking about a pull-up bar. I mean...
it's huge. We've got a big locker.
Big locker. It's going to have to be a pull-up bar. I'm just, like pull-up bar, I love pull-ups and I kind of can't get enough of doing at least 100 a day. So that's what I would throw in the locker, my pull-up bar.
So do you have that in your house now? Or is that something in a gym or how's that work?
Yeah, I have the best pull-up bar. So it's I can move it as well. So it's one of those pull-up bars where it's not stuck in the ground. You can move it, it's stable. So I move it around the house and I don't even see it in any of the workout videos, but we have it in the workout videos sometimes as well. So It's my lifesaver, if I'm honest, because when I get kind of tired and thinking about stuff, I would normally go, if it's not a run, I'll go and do some sort of workout, which will always involve pull-ups or muscle-ups or whatever, however energy what I have to expel on that day, really.
Nice. I thought it would be, because for those who don't know Bourne, he's very much into his workouts, which we're going to explore throughout this podcast, but I was predicting it was going to be some form of workout equipment, and pull-up bar is pretty cool. So is that anything that's involved in your workouts, or is that just more for your personal use, or how does that work in terms of what you deliver and what you do?
Well, it's more for personal use. I think we've gone down to, especially over the past months, we decided that body weight workouts is what we're kind of excelling at. I mean, no equipment, fresh and clean, you can get it done, whether it's 10 minutes, whether it's 20 minutes. And that's what we really excel at now in terms of what we do on a day-to-day basis. Personal, I run a lot. I do a lot of running and I do a lot of calisthenics as well. So that's more of a personal choice for me. But the bread and butter is definitely going to be a bird pee because I love a bird pee.
Nice.
And I love it. And I love anything that I can use the floor to kind of get a sweat on.
So yeah, I've been... So that's your one item. We've got it in. We've got it locked in. The other one thing we ask for next is one emotion. So when it comes to physical activity for you, what one emotion would you describe your relationship with it?
Well, it's that emotion where you're almost about to quit. So the way that I train, I like to push myself to that point where you could stop and you could just have an easy session. But there's that thing in your head that says, if I stopped and had an easy session, would life always be like that when it gets hard? So the reason why I like to go to that limit where you could quit, but you don't, it really prepares me for life, because life is always going to throw challenges in your way. And if you know, for instance, we're at the moment where I'm trying to run a hilly 5K in sub 18 minutes, and we started off doing the hilly 5K in 20 minutes, then we got 19, then we got 18, and now we say, okay, let's do 17. And every day it hurts. But I love that. So my emotion is getting to that point where you feel like you're going to quit, and whether the, mm-hmm. the music you're listening to or whether there's something you're thinking about in your head takes you to the finish line and you really enjoy making it and not stopping.
So has there been a time, so it's all about willpower, you would say, you're like your one word is that strong willpower to push on further. Has there been a time where you possibly have been low and you've really used that emotion to drive you forward?
I mean in a business journey or in your exercise journey, there's going to be times where you're low, and there's going to be times where you will even look at what other people are doing as well. So if the beauty about, or it could be a beauty, it could be something which isn't good, is that you can see how hard everyone is training, especially in the fitness industry. Mm-hmm. They're posting these videos, they're doing stuff, and obviously we know that that's a highlight of what they're actually doing at that time, because social media just highlights the best bits of people's lives. But especially for fitness, it can really hurt when you're like in a bad place and someone's posting mm-hmm. something and you can't do a piston squat, or you can't do a handstand, for instance, and someone's there mm-hmm. getting into handstands. You're like, oh, I really want to do one. So then you go and train. So it's that trying to do the impossible, because in my life I always want to try and do the impossible and succeed in not doing the impossible, and then go, okay, mm-hmm. let's repeat that cycle. How can we make it even better and even bigger? And training is a discipline that prepares you for anything in life, I'd say.
That's really interesting, because I was just having a conversation with Callum before this. I was like, you've got to check out his page, because he's putting on some high level stuff. And so it's so relatable of what you're saying. Everyone kind of feels that same. There's always someone who's like, you're looking up thinking, wow, they're doing some really cool stuff. I was pretty much talking about your 18 minutes that you've just said you've achieved, which is awesome in terms of your 5K. Because I've been like, yeah, I want to get to 20 minutes. And I know as soon as if I get to 20 minutes, I know I'm going to be like, Bourne's at 18, let's go, let's get the lower time. I know I'm going to be like that. So yeah. It's really interesting that you're at 18 and you're looking ahead to the person who's at 17. So I know there'll be people who are at the 25s thinking, how do I get there? And it's just about setting a like realistic goal and just keep believing in yourself.
That's amazing. Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And it's, I think what will happen is, well, you get to 20 and you will run 20 and you run, and it'll be easy. So, and I can't even explain it in any better ways, is that like I run a hilly 5K, so it's up hills and stuff. And I tried for a good 2 months to break 20. And then one day I went from doing 20.07 to 19.17. Like, I broke it, we put it down. I was like, whoa, that's a massive jump. I was so happy. I screamed in the park and everyone looked at me, the deer, got scared and ran away. And then I said, okay, let's go 18. And the same repeated that cycle. But I was running 20 minutes, like 19 minutes, like it was nothing. And then suddenly I broke 19. And then I started running 18 minutes like it was easy. So your body's so good at adapting if you continually push it to that limit. And then as a mental kind of almost distribution back to you is that, wow, mm-hmm. I know if I can dedicate time, energy and air to a goal, I can achieve it. And then that kind of spills into so many different parts of your life. And that's mm-hmm. why you have to keep pushing yourself, because if it was easy, everyone would do it.
Is that why you think is that a possible reason why your business is about your like yourself and physical fitness? Do you reckon that's where the transition has come, because you know that you can push yourself physically and that helps you in terms of your business as well, because it is a part of it and not all of it is about yourself building your brand as much as it is about building the actual business itself?
Yeah. The biggest question when you start a business is, who's going to be your brand? Who? So, because people don't communicate with logos, people communicate with all people. So mm-hmm. if you're not going to be your brand, who? Someone has to. So, and I remember having that conversation when I was starting up with my wife, and we said, it's going to have to be you. And at that time I trained a bit. I didn't really want to push myself. I used to be an athlete, so kind of when I stopped having to get up, and I was a decathlete as well. So you train in the morning, go home, and you go and train in the evening as well. When I stopped having to do that, I was like, oh, I'm not going to do that anymore. Like, it's just hard work. And then suddenly I realized people really gravitate towards things that inspire them. And then, so that's your brandhood. And suddenly I decided that I needed to be an advocate, because we have all these fantastic coaches that I'm asking them to do stuff. I need to be able to do exactly what they're doing and not be the weak link, and also lead them. And that's what we did. So we kind of, I got to a position where I said, I need to be one of the fittest guys in our team. Just when we're doing road shows and when we're doing stuff, they're not holding up their leader. And then the kind of person I am, I take that to the level which it is at the moment. And I mean, you said Tough Mudder, all the stuff I've done since then, it's just a kind of almost a bypass, a building block of what I was trying to build. And I started doing it for other people, and now I enjoy it. So it's
good. That's really cool. That's so cool. I think this will kind of build on nicely, because you've mentioned parts of your, like, going throughout your life and the types of conversations that you're having. So the next question is about your earliest memories of being physically active. So what do you have any early memories of being physically active, and what was your feelings and what was that about?
So as a kid, we was always out. So mum would say, go out and come back at lunchtime, and you would just have to go out and run around and play football, play tennis. We played tennis a lot, actually. We did. We used to watch Wimbledon on TV, and then we would jump over the gate to the locked tennis court that was never open for some reason, and we'd play lots of tennis. And we just got really, really good at kind of hand-eye coordination, change of direction. But then I really didn't know that I was like a sportsman until like school. And unfortunately for me, when I got the first and second year of school, I spent on crutches because I used to skateboard. And every year I cracked my patella. It's just one of those things. Wow. I would just fall off the skateboard. So the first year of school, I woke up on crutches with a cracked patella. And in those days, you had the cast on for a bit longer. And then when you get it off, you can't walk straight away. It's not like, oh yeah, cast comes off. Yeah, I'm gonna walk. So you learn how to walk again. And then I crack the other one. So I get back on the skateboard. And then so I had a good period of just being on crutches. So I didn't know how fast I was or how I could jump. And then year nine is really when I could really do sport again without feeling pain in the knees and stuff. And I realized I was quite fast, but I could jump really high for some reason. I did high jump. And my memories of school are me always being the last event at the school county championships, or jump for London or England, and coming in. I always make a point of coming in when everyone was out. So they say, are you coming in yet? No. I was like age 14 jumping 2 meters, which is, I'm not very tall. So 2 meters is a big deal. And I remember a chap called Dalton Grant at the time, he was a British high jump record holder, saw me jumping a mile end. And he was like, you need to come train. Like, you can't get away just jumping those heights and always winning, because you're going to get to a position where everyone has your talent, but they train. I didn't understand that part of training, because I thought, I can just go and do it.
So was he someone who influenced you quite heavily then, or was he one of your first influences in terms of a role model into your athletic profession?
He was, man. He was really good, I think. And in a way which I thought training was going to be so regimented and boring, where I remember some of the warm-ups we did, it was awesome. We would go and play football, do rugby, nothing to do with athletics, just get warm, play all these fun games. I realized, actually, no, it's, you can make whatever it is fun, as long as you know You're going to warm up, you're going to do a session, and you're going to cool down. However you do that to get you to your goal is determined by having a good coach and a good leader. The worst are the ones that say, we've always done it this way, so you're going to do it that way, and not adapt for kids that have, whether it's ADHD, whether it's kind of concentration issues. And they almost get rid of that talent because they're not willing to adapt the way that they coach to get the best out of their athletes. And I was very lucky that I had the opportunity to work with some fantastic coaches that adapted the way in which they delivered their sessions to us young people.
So that must have really impacted how you deliver your business now, delivering these sessions in the parks, and how you kind of set your structure for your coaches that you employ.
100%. We target inactive people. We target people that don't take part in exercise for whatever reason it is, whether or not want to be in the gym, fear of kind of sport from school, and that's what we do. And it's all around. I feel like everyone needs to have the opportunity to take part in high quality exercise, no matter where they live, how much money they have, and what their past experience were with sport or physical activity. So it's definitely geared the way in which we deliver and how we train with people.
So yeah, you say about your physical activity and you said the type of inactive people that you target. It was a question a bit further along, but I feel it fits quite naturally here. So as you say, pretty much the same ethos as Humans of Fit about getting the inactive people active. And you mention about, you say you don't like the hard to reach groups title. I personally agree with that. We saw that on your, I think it was your LinkedIn, and it's I agree with that so much because it's only hard to reach for the person who's not providing the right activity or going to the right person. Yeah. So, could you tell us a bit about how your feeling towards that and how you came about that ideology of that's not the right way to approach it?
Yeah, 100%. I think kind of. If you put hard to reach in a box, I was hard to reach. I mean, I was in that hard to reach group. And the fact that we get hundreds of thousands of people fit every week because someone managed to reach me, I wasn't hard to reach. It was delivering the information, the activity in the wrong format or in the wrong place where I couldn't see it. So if you're going to do system change, you have to change the system so more people can get into the system. So the idea of, we're going to write an inclusive and diversity strategy and stick it on our website and we've done our job, that doesn't work. So you have to say, whatever you're going to write, whatever you're going to do, there needs to be an action to implement how you're going to do that. And I think really, really good coaches and organizations don't just write stuff and put it on the tick boxes. They tick boxes, or not even tick boxes, they make actions and then they write what actions they're taking and how they can improve their actions to get more people into their exercise or the organization. And that's really important, especially in this time.
So you say you've managed to engage with that audience. What would you say was the key to your success in terms of as your business? Was it a specific area that you looked into, or was it more the way that you were addressing it as a whole? So what was the key to our parks being a success?
Yeah, where I came from was just, I had two options in life. It was either do sport or do the other thing. And I think I knew the community when I was growing up, and I have friends that are still in there. So I kind of understand it. And I thought, so for me, it was have mom, have aunties, I have everyone that doesn't take part in exercise. And I know why. And it was just, I know real people, just give them what they want. So it was kind of make it accessible, make it fun, and where it's scary, make it approachable. And it's really quite easy, but it's so hard to do because when you look at the layers and the amount of traffic or noise companies have to deal with, suddenly remembering someone's name changing the title of an exercise class to be more inclusive when you're making all this money the other way doesn't really appeal to the organization. And the problem with that is at some point they would die. So you have this philosophy of change or die, and you can look at it through music, you look at it through sport. What happens is people gravitate to what they affiliate with, what's cool for them.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you're looking at grime music, drill music, or whatever it is, even though there's still barriers against it because of what's happening in there, they're still growing and people are gravitating to it because it's cool to them. And everyone would say, no, we're going to keep them out. We get to a point where, and we've seen it with the UK charts, pretty much every artist now that's a UK artist is from an urban background. And it's like, so suddenly, why aren't we seeing that in the fitness industry? It will happen. And my definition of urban is someone who's willing, they can be from any part of the country, but they're willing to support the community and the people that they associate with on a daily basis into a model which will allow them to access whatever they're delivering. And it's not, oh, we're going to deliver boot camp and charge £65 a session, and we're only going to target the people that can make £65, because you can do that. But if you can find a model that's better than that, we could target everyone that lives near the park, you're going to make a massive impact. So for me, it's not about money. It's all around how can we give everyone the opportunity to meet new people. The term new people could be the person that lives next door to you. That's how close new people could be, but you've never spoken to them because you've never had a common ground to speak. And suddenly you go to an outdoor exercise class and they're next to you and you're holding pads and you have to say something. And then, oh, I actually really like you. Why haven't I spoken to you in the past 20
surprising.
Years?
Surprising.
It's as simple as that. And I think that's what really drives me, kind of, to bring as many communities together, social mobility, and really harnessing the power of exercise to do that.
That sounds awesome. I think you mentioned it there, and it is one of my questions because it's a huge part of what I see from your social media and everything that you've said about yourself. It's about music. It seems to be deeply ingrained in everything you do, including you write songs for your workouts when you post your videos. I'm like, that's actually you on that track that you're working out to. So how big a role does music play in terms of your motivations to work out and in terms of how you do, what you deliver what you do?
Huge experience. Music is, I mean, it's one of those calling cards where you go, a place you go when you're feeling happy, feeling sad, want to be motivated. Everyone has some sort of affinity with music. And we're releasing the first fitness album, which is going to be geared to working out to music that isn't swearing, that isn't talking about women, girls, cars, money. It's talking about motivation and getting you ready to do your workout. And I mean, I just saw a gap in that, to be honest. I saw when you go into a gym, or wherever you go to a workout, music always plays a pivotal part in that workout. But yeah, we're still not, as companies and coaches, saying, oh, let's put music. And they do put music into their workout, so I'm not saying they don't, but let's put music that actually really represents the genre and the job, what we're trying to get done. Which is
a tool.
We don't do that. We just grab a song that's already out there, that's in the charts, that has no relevance to working out, and play it in the class. And I said, John, we need to change that, because that's something which will encourage more people to work out if you can change the experience.
That's really cool. I'm just looking at the other things that you do in terms of social media, and I have Callum, who produces the video, wants to ask an amazing question. So for those who don't know, my friend Callum is an amazing guy. He gets involved and really helped me with the podcast. And he's just said, what are the ingredients of a workout banger? So I think that's something that I have to ask.
Yeah, definitely. So you have to... Music, obviously, is a high thing. But you have to... When you cut a video... And I cut videos for lots of people. I do stuff for Lucas Day, I do stuff for Tough Mudder. You have to almost give them what's going to happen in the first 2 seconds. So sometimes you might see a video and it will go cut, 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 cut. It will show you every exercise is going to happen. But then the first exercise has to be an exercise that they didn't expect to see or something they've never seen before. So I mean, one of the best performing ones we do at the moment, we do a thing called a squat rock, which is you squat and you rock forward.
I was thinking of that one. I was like, when I saw you do that, I was like, what is it? What? I liked it. Yeah. So, I was actually thinking of that one.
And that's the first thing you do, and then you do a few follow ups within there, and then you look at this insight to it. So. How we do this is that we look at the insight and we see how many people have saved the video, how many followers you got off that video, and then when you get your niche, you just keep giving them the same thing. And we're growing. I've only really started again on the videos, and that's because I wanted to get to a certain follower quota, which is going it's going in the way it needs to go, and I just from doing stuff with other brands. I kind of worked out the banger. Mm-hmm. The banger, 1 minute. A whole exercise should be, all exercise should be done in 1 minute. But then you should then also add almost when you do a slideshow, add the breakdowns of each exercise on that video as well. So you can watch the whole video, but if you want to go over to a particular exercise, you scroll along and you can watch it and learn how to do it.
Awesome.
That's my banger. My banger tip.
That's cool. So you mentioned it as well. How did you get involved in Tough Mudder and Lucozade? Did they approach you? Is that something that you always kind of wanted to do? Or did it naturally come through your work? Are they sponsorships, partnerships? Tell us a bit more about them.
It's interesting because I didn't actually know what Tough Mudder was. And, I think even 3 years ago. And then our Parkers went and ran a Tough Mudder. And then I got sponsored by Merrill. So Merrill was our footwear sponsor. And they sponsored Tough Mudder. And I remember sitting in a meeting and Mel was saying, yeah, you should go and check out Tough Mudder. It's good. I said, okay, cool. I'm getting attacked by wasps out here. I said, yeah, I'll check it out. And they brought me down to one of the events. And then we then got sponsored by Lucozade, who's also sponsored Tough Mudder.
Yeah.
And then we realized actually we should be doing some workouts. And I kind of... started doing a few workouts for them. I started running as an influencer with some of their influencers. And then it was one of those things where it just happened.
Yeah.
Because on right the course, timing. I could... Right timing. And I could do... On the course, I could do quite crazy stuff on the course. So, like, I don't know if you've seen me run up Everest, no hands, and do stuff that jump over the hail... Because I can jump quite really high. I could jump over the hail bales. And they said, wow, you could be a kind of Tough Mudder UK trainer. And then it's happened. We made lots of videos. We make a video every week. So we haven't stopped making a video every week. I think it's 3 years now. So
wow.
We workout Wednesday. It's so many videos and we've done so many cool workouts. I mean, some of the stuff we've filmed and the amount of engagement it's got, it's almost like with Tough Mudder, and I love Tough Mudder so much. They're such a powerful brand. When things go viral, so if you can, every week, you can do a video that's going to hit, like a viral video, you've then, back to your banger point, you've then got something that really works. And we worked really hard on finding out what's going to engage with our audience. So every week sometimes we might jump over tires, sometimes we might jump cars, we might just do like all crazy stuff just to get that view. So we really enjoyed it.
That's awesome. I've I did Tough Mudder. I loved the event, and just hearing that you didn't really know about it, I was like, whoa, because it's like I wanted to mix up my training a few years ago, and I wanted to get into running, but I hated running. I'm still not a fan of running at all. I can run and I'm all right at it, but I just hate the thought of going out and running. But I was like, right, I want to pick up my pace, but I also want to train. So me and my friend signed up for Europe's Toughest Mudder.
Hey.
And so we did the 8 hours overnight, starts at midnight. We're like, right, we'll sign up for the one in Germany. We'll do that. Don't know why. And we did it and it was awesome. And it rained through. I was sick twice during it. But like, I just made me fall in love with the brand. So what was it like running your first like Tough Mudder for you? Did you enjoy the process or what was that like?
Yeah, I loved it. That was my first ever obstacle race as well. So that's why cool. I mean, so I've never done another brand of obstacle races because there's no point. I'm in for the long run with Tough Mudder. Europe's Toughest Mudder, that was hard. I've run marathons. I'm good over the course. It's only 10 miles. But running for 12 hours, that's what we did 12 hours. I think we did. Yeah, 12 hours.
Oh, you did the recent one. Wow.
Yeah. It's challenging, should I say. If anyone's going to run one, I just want to say I didn't take my own advice. So I did this whole workout. I told people what to do before. And then the day of, I was really worried I was going to cramp up. So I got some magnesium tablets. And I took some. And that was the worst thing I could ever have done. It's just... Yeah, I don't want to go into detail, but it was a toilet stop every lap.
Should I say?
So I didn't really enjoy it. After I think when you got to 1 o'clock, and we was in a place called Beauvoir Castle, and they have hounds that they have on the grounds. So when it was dark, you could just hear hounds in the bushes go, and you were running. And sometimes you wouldn't be with anyone, and everyone was all scared. It was horrible, but we made it.
How did it feel afterwards?
Awesome. Yeah, it's back to that challenge point, whereas it's all about the time, and then you make it through, and you're like, wow, that was awesome. And then you say, I'm never going to do it again, and then you get asked to do it again, and you do it again. It's like you forget about all the pain and suffering you had on that journey.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, talking about that, there may have been, you spoke a bit about advice and stuff like that. Do you set goals for yourself? Are you the type of person who sets goals and works towards them? You say about you're strongly motivated, but you try to achieve a lot. But do you set a goal in the future and say, is that something I'm going to work towards personally?
Yeah, you have to set goals. Fitness goals, life goals. You have to set goals because I always say it's like taking a journey and saying I'm going to go and find out where you live, but I'm not going to take a map or take any directions. And it's hopefully I'll go that way and see what happens. And anything like that, if you see what happens, you'll get lost and you won't achieve your goal because you haven't set one. So I'd say I set goals regularly. I used to do New Year's resolutions where I would do something crazy. One year I did 100 burpees every day for a year. Then I did 100 pull-ups every day for a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done stuff which tested me as well. But then made me really master that craft. So I'm a bit extreme like that. If I can't do something, I'll say, actually, I'm going to do that every day until I can do it. And then you end up being able to do it. And then I say, you can do it really well. You're like, yeah, fine. But then you go on to the next thing. So I say, if you can set yourself fitness goals, but entwine them with some life ambitions.
So what's your next goal? What's the next thing you're working towards? What are you working towards currently?
For fitness, triathlon. Swimming isn't my strongest thing. And when I'm running Ironman, so my next thing is do my first try. It was going to be this year, but see what happens. And then run an Ironman. So that's my next goal.
In terms of fitness, Gordon, do you have any, in terms of more personal or business ones, do you have any other goals for yourself?
Business wise, when we're growing, it's crazy for us at the moment with all the new people that want to work with us, and it just keeps going. But we just, for me, I just want to sit on a few more boards. So I sit on three boards at the moment. I sit on Bucks, sit on Active Surrey, and I sit on the British Olympic Foundation. There's a few other boards that I want to sit on just to give that high level support. Whereas back to that whole point around system change, if we don't, if we always do the same thing and have the same people having the same conversations, they pat themselves in that, on the back in that room, but nothing ever changes. So I need to be in a position where we can question the governance and direction of what we're trying to achieve, because ultimately we're trying to achieve the same thing as getting more people active and give it a new steer to how we do that. So that's really important for me on my kind of 5-year plan.
That's awesome. When Humans Are Fit is obviously as huge as it's going to be, oh, I'll be coming to you for being a board member then.
Hey, definitely, 100%, 100%.
Cool. So I've got a few more questions for you. The next one is if anyone's listening right now and they've been really inspired by seeing you, seeing your challenges, doing all your events, your business, how you've kind of come about, and they're all fired up and want to get involved in some activity or want to take some action, what would you say to them? What would be like the thing you say to get them going?
I would say do your research, plan on what you want to do, and let's go and do it. And when I say plan, I don't mean take lots of time to write an in-depth, step-by-step guide of how you're going to do it. I started my business on a napkin. I walked into a meeting and I had an idea and a plan, and I said, this is where I want to go. This is my ethos. So definitely taking a leap of faith to start your own business, your movement, organization, a service is the most gratifying thing you can do, because if you don't do it, you will never know what you could actually achieve. So 100%.
So with that first step, you say it was all about the planning. That was a big part of it. Why is that so important to you? Why do you feel like, in terms of if someone was going to get into activity, a lot of people think, oh, I just need to, there should just be stuff for me. Like, why should people really consider the planning side of getting involved?
Yeah, because, and it's as simple as if you're going to go for a run in the morning and you don't lay your running kit out on the floor, it makes you 50% less likely to go for the run. It's very simple, like simple things like that. So if I'm going to go for a run early in the morning, all I have to do is, we had a shower, you get rid of bed, let's put your kit, your socks, your t-shirt, your shorts. I guarantee you, you'll have to feel, oh, I have to go and find it. It's already, it's calling you as you wake up and you're going, yeah. It's just little things like that where you don't have to overplan. You just have to plan, whether it's setting a reminder, whether it's booking onto that class. The things that we fail at doing is, yeah, I'm going to do that. Yeah, I'll do that. I'm going to do that. And then no action is taken. When you say you're going to do something, take one step to make sure you can actually do it, rather than saying, yeah, I'm going to do that, or 6 years later, I could have done that. And I can't stand, I could have done that. But no, if you could have done it, you would have done it, and you were taking the steps to do it.
I totally agree, and really everything you say resonates with me, because especially with like the laying your stuff out, because I'm exactly the same. I like to work out in the morning, but I hate the idea of waking up and then I'm like, oh, I've got to work out now, I've got to go. So I do everything the night before, shower, pack my bag, I make my snacks. I even went to overnight oats, so they're in the fridge. So when I first get up, I have my clothes, which are already laid out, next to my bag, which is ready for work. And I put it on, go downstairs, eyes are still like closed, eat my cereal, and even have my fruit by the door, ready to go. Like, I've had to plan my life so much because I exactly resonate. Otherwise, they're all little barriers that could stop me doing it. So I completely 100%. Understand. So we're on to my last question, and this one is hopefully a fun one. It's about it's a dinner party. It's a inspirational dinner party. So what we ask is that you're sitting at your table, you've got three seats. You got anyone can come. Three people who inspire you in terms of you personally, to who gets you up and going throughout your entire life, or who would you like to have those conversations with? Oh. They can be dead or alive, but these three people, they're going to be set in stone now, are going to be recorded. So you got to think carefully. That's why I've put my nanny Barbs. She is an angel, inspires me. She looked after me when I needed to be looked after. Frank Lampard, because I wanted to score goals like him. I wanted to score screamers like Frank Lampard all the time. Chelsea, big Chelsea fan. And then a guy called Graham Hughes that not many people know about, but he was the first person to travel around all the countries without flying. So I reckon he would have a crazy amount of stories about just everything he's done, because that's the Guinness World Record. So yeah, I think they're my three people. Hopefully that's given you a bit of time to think about yours. So yeah.
My three people, I would say, so Mark Wahlberg first, because I just love everything he does. I mean, and I read an article around how he made it and his determination to continue to deliver high quality and fun films and comedy, all that kind of stuff. So I love him. I'd love to pick his brains and see what goes through his mind. Yeah. The next one is quite controversial, because, I mean, I love AJ, and he's in the Lucas A Sport camp, but I'd really love to invite Tyson Fury. I just love Tyson Fury. I love his character and the way he articulates himself, and I think he would make really good conversation at a dinner table, and he would be honest as well. He would just tell you what he thinks. And the last one is probably a very controversial man. Yeah, he's very controversial. But my wife and I always say, just because the way he is, we think he would be hilarious, would be 50 Cent at our dinner table. Oh,
wow, what a choice.
he's just a lunatic. In some of the stuff he does on social media is like, why would you do that? But he always has a good conversation around it, and he's always explaining himself. So that would be a really interesting dinner. And it's funny, because it's not really sport, or other than Tyson, it's not really sport inspired. It's just more around when I'm not doing sport, I normally watch stuff on Netflix and whatnot, because you need to switch off. And that's what really jumps out.
Yeah, there are three people that inspired you. And the first thing I think of is, an amazing parody music video. Imagine Mark Wahlberg, 50 Cent, and Tyson Fury, the Mike Tyson, sorry. I even kind of stuttering with my words thinking about the parody video. I think that would be awesome. And imagine those three, like, attending one of your workouts as well. Imagine this.
And they all work out a lot as well. So that's where probably the link is as well.
So yeah, I really like them. So for us, just so that we can get it all in one order, who are the three people you'd have around your inspirational dinner party table?
Tyson Fury, Mark Wahlberg, and 50 Cent.
Awesome. So yeah, that's us done for today. Thank you very much for coming on and talking about your relationship with physical activity. The podcast itself is called Working It Out, and I feel like we've worked out what inspires you and motivates you, and how other people can just be inspired by you. So thank you very much.
Excellent. Thanks for having me. That was fun.